All right, what's up, Crip Nation? Bryson Pizza Mind coming at you from San Diego, California, per usual. Last week I was in Maui. It was delightful. I met many, many, many great people. Reconnected with some old friends. It was a best friend's wedding. So we just celebrated all week. You know, we recorded a couple podcasts. We just stayed up to date with the trends and with the news. But today we are joined by Kevin Wang, who is a... So Kevin is an expert in particularly crypto economics and scaling blockchains. So I'm particularly excited about this episode because, you know, we're going to really peel back what it means to scale a blockchain. You know, we're going to look at state channels and side chains. But moreover, we're really going to look at the trade-offs in performance, decentralization, and security when deciding a methodology of scaling a blockchain. And for those of you that maybe aren't familiar with the idea of scaling a blockchain, it just means how are we going to get, you know, high throughput where we could transfer not 7 transactions a second, but, you know, 7,000 transactions a second, and really get this really robust network that could handle a lot of throughput. So there's lots of computer science trade-offs that go into this. So we're going to break it down. We're going to give you the 101. You know, if you've ever wondered what kind of data is stored in a block, if you've ever wondered what it takes for a blockchain to be decentralized technologically, this is really going to be the episode for you. You know, we're going to break down layer 2 in regards to state channels and side chains. So there's a lot to cover, and Kevin does a really good job of breaking it down. And real quick, before we get to introduce our guest, Kevin, thank you for being so patient over there. We want to let you guys know, you know, our preferred method for storing digital currency, that's the BRD wallet. So the BRD wallet, it's a really beautiful app. It's super user-friendly. It's actually like genuinely the easiest wallet to use. You just download the app. You generate your private keys. You get a little mnemonic, right? It's those 12 words that you get to control your own crypto. And they really focus on a good user experience for the mainstream, right? Their mission is so well aligned with our mission. That's why we like to talk about them. So go ahead and download the BRD wallet app, store any digital currency you have. And I promise you from the bottom of my heart, you will be thrilled with the experience of using this wallet. So, I mean, if you don't have a wallet yet and you've been listening to this podcast for however long, now's the time. And if you already do have a wallet, I still encourage you to go ahead and give it a try, because you might find something in this wallet that is a little bit better than what you're used to or what you are currently using. So without further ado, Kevin Wang, you are the man. Welcome to the show. Really glad to finally get to speak with you. This has been one that I've been looking forward to because you have such a unique subset of knowledge, if you will, in regards to crypto economics and actually how these blockchains scale. So Kevin, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here, Bryce and Pizza Mind.
We are very excited to have you. So Kevin, you co-founded the Nervos Network, which is a very cool blockchain project. So what is that vision? And at a high level, what is Nervos Network trying to accomplish, and how is it different than some of the other blockchains that are out there?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So the way we see the future is that a lot of the real world value is going to flow into the blockchain space. And then, you know, we kind of focus on value because that's what we believe is the most unique feature of blockchain technology in general. Unlike, you know, the internet, which is also a decentralized platform, sort of based on messaging, but really the strength of a decentralized network like a blockchain is that it can be a platform of value, right? So it can have this decentralized trust, and therefore you can put something of value on this platform. What we see is in the future, value is going to flow into the blockchain space. And to have a platform to serve that future, we feel that the best approach is to have a layered infrastructure where, you know, layer one is purely focused on value, right? So to be more specific to the value preservation property, commonly known as the store of value if you come from the Bitcoin space. But in comparison to Bitcoin, that Bitcoin can only express one type of value, which is, you know, monetary value. you know, with Bitcoin, that's, you know, treated as currency. But, you know, we want to build a platform that has multi-asset support, you know, with smart contract support, but also to be positioned as a store of value system, just like Bitcoin. So that is layer one.
What other kinds of value are there?
All kinds of, you know, crypto assets. The most obvious ones are going to be like on Ethereum, you have these tokens, right? So these are, you know, these are not used as currencies, but they may represent claim to specific, you know, for example, token ERC-20 tokens or you know, like CryptoKitties, right? So those are digital native values that can be stored on the blockchain platform.
Oh, okay, I see.
So yeah, so going on forward, I mean, that's just, you know, those are what we call digital native values. You also have, you know, tokens in general can represent, for example, real world values, right? So the example of this is, where do you see the sort of US dollar base backed stable coins? This is where like true USD, USDC, and to some extent Tether as well, right? So they are also accepted as value on the blockchain, but they are basically, you know, mapping of real world assets, which is basically US dollars, right, cash, but onto the blockchain. So this is the first step in this direction, what we believe, and in the future we'll see more types of you know, either financial products or other, some other type of real world value that can also be moved into the blockchain. So a lot of it is really social consensus, right? So what people, you know, if all everybody sort of use blockchain as the registry for these values, and then can collaborate and recognize that's the authoritative place, you know, to make a claim on a piece of real world assets, then, you know, value can then preserve and flow on the blockchain platforms.
Right. Awesome. So you talked about this layered approach that Nervos Network is taking, whereby the layer one protocol is simply for handling the value preservation aspect. And then you referenced some other layers. So I'm assuming that, you know, layer two is going to be some type of scaling solution, whether that's sharding. So maybe you could go into what layer two, and is there a layer three?
Yeah, so layer two is a pretty you know, established term. And then, you know, when we talk about layer two, it's really in comparison to layer one, right? So layer two technology, the most commonly known layer technology is Lightning Network, or, you know, payment channel, or Lightning Network for Bitcoin payment network. So this is where you can open the channel between two parties, and instead of having each transaction settle on the blockchain itself, for example, you and me can open the channel, and then we can pass around, it's like a bar tab, right? We can pass around this, there's a piece of paper that that records, like, here is how much money I owe you, and then you know, I can keep paying you the money, just update this balance. And in the end, when we want to close this balance, then we can settle with one transaction on the blockchain network, right? For example, on Bitcoin.
Right.
So the idea is, you know, we could do hundreds or even thousands of transactions between us, but on the blockchain, it's really just one transaction. Well, it's actually two, right? When we open this balance and when we close it. So this is sort of, we're compressing all of these transactions into just two transactions on the blockchain. So that's a that's an example of layer two tech, in particular for payment network.
So what's the scaling solution that Nervos is taking, and what makes it unique?
Yeah, so in terms of scaling, we are very much into layer two scaling, right? So we are a general purpose platform, not just for payments, but you know, loosely you can put us in the smart contract category. So it really depends on the specific use case of, you know, what people want to do on this platform. You know, for example, if it's more about, you know, a game between two people, let's say we're playing chess, right? And then just go back and forth, and then we take turns. So that's very much like the payment channel example that I said, that just gave. And instead of doing, you know, signing transactions on payments, we're going to just make moves on the chessboard, and then we can in the end we can close that and then you know, settle the game on the blockchain. So that is called a state channel, right, instead of payment channels. On the other hand, I mean, we could have something like sidechains where sort of a series of state transitions can happen on the separate blockchain that you can think about like tethering onto the main blockchain. And so we can, you know, do transactions on the sidechain and then eventually settle back to the main chain. So basically use the layer one blockchain as a settlement layer. Now, this is, again, it's a very broad area, and then there's a lot of different technologies with different trade-offs, you know, in terms of trust model, in terms of, you know, finality and you know, privacy and all that. But you know, if you guys are interested, I'm happy to dive into more details into this direction too.
Let's actually talk a little bit more about layer one. I imagine you and your engineers are having a whiteboard session, and you say, okay, today, guys, we're going to make a blockchain. And we need to decide on all the different variables. We need to figure out block times, consensus algorithms, block size, et cetera, all this stuff. What are the security trade-offs between the decisions for each one of these things versus performance?
So if we only, you know, so first of all, just go back to your question, right? First of all, I think a step before that is to, for, you know, all the folks to be in the room and talk about, you know, what we're trying to build. What's the value proposition of this blockchain in the first place, right? I think only if I have any answer to that, then we can, you know, talk about the technical trade-offs and answers and know what we're going to pick. But let's say we're going to the technical step and evaluating different options. It's really, so mostly it's a trade-off between sort of decentralization and scalability. And we have seen this quite a bit, you know, again, using the example of Bitcoin. And this debate happened probably 3-4 years ago, this small block, big block debate, where, you know, by supplying, you know, increasing the supply of blocks, we will have more throughput, right, transaction per second. On the other hand, that also means you put a much heavier demand on the type of hardware or you know, hardware that people need to have to run the blocks, to run nodes. So which means, you know, less and less people are able to, you know, run full nodes. And then, so there will be a lot less full nodes on the network and decrease the resilience of the network. And which also, you know, it could potentially get to the point that, you know, only professionals can run nodes. And then, so for regular users, if you want to, for example, if you and me want to, do a peer-to-peer transaction, then we have to rely on somebody else to validate that this transaction took place. And also, you know, you and me won't be able to independently verify from Genesis that the current blockchain is in this state, right? So these are, I think, again, coming from Bitcoin, those are some of the core value proposition of a decentralized network, in that, you know, everybody can participate. And then everybody can independently verify current state. Don't have to trust, but you don't have to trust anybody else. And then, you know, you and me can, if you run a full node, I run a full node, we both know the current world state. And then if you give me a payment, we both know whether that have taken place. And, you know, for example, had 6 blocks have passed, then, you know, we're ready to change.
So would you say, as a general rule, larger block times and smaller block sizes is a good philosophy to have a more secure blockchain?
Yeah. So I would say faster block size, a faster block time or larger block size are more or less equivalent, right? So just use, we can just use block size for this example, that the larger the block size is, the less decentralized the network will be. In other words, people will have to rely more on service providers. You know, for example, right? Typically, you would, you know, go to like a blockchain.info to check whether a transaction has taken place, and then the current, you know, balance of a specific address. But, right, so if we have smaller blocks, then it's much easier just for me to, you know, run a blockchain, Bitcoin node from on my own, you know, desktop, and then I can validate or state independently from Genesis. So I don't have to rely on anybody to tell me whether a transaction has taken place or how much money you have right now.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's a good point to segue quickly into the, you know, the whole idea of you not having to rely on anybody. Pizzamine and I talk endlessly about the importance of having non-custodial wallets, right? And non-custodial wallets is something whereby you own your own private keys. And not many wallets do that, right? Like Coinbase custodies those wallets for you. And if Coinbase gets hacked, then you lose your coins. But, you know, there's a cool app called BRD. It's a wallet. It's a digital currency wallet. It'll hold any of your crypto. You control your private keys. It's a super user-friendly experience. And you know, this is one of these apps that, you know, me and Pizzamine are super passionate about. So, you know, I want to encourage everybody who's tuning in today to go ahead, download the BRD app. It's this, you know, beautiful orange and pink and white app. And they really focus on security and user experience above anything. They got a great support team. Email them with any questions you have. And they just finished a one Bitcoin giveaway. So that could have been you. If you downloaded it before September 1st, I think the dates were like August 24th to September 1st, one lucky winner. So if you're out there and you're listening and you were that listener, please get into contact with us. We'd love to bring you on the show. But let's jump back to what we were just talking about. And I think what we're talking about here is extremely pertinent to the conversation that was revolving around the Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash fork.
Exactly.
In part, I mean, it was largely because that some of the guys wanted bigger blocks, and which would result in more centralization of the network. And the reason why that requires more centralization of the network, or I should say the reason why it affects or causes more centralization of the network, is because these blocks require more storage, and a normal guy like me and Pizzamine wouldn't actually be able to, you know, have, you know, gigabyte blocks. It would just be, we would need to use a data center and be too prohibitive. Is that correct?
Yeah. So definitely state storage. So in Bitcoin, state storage is basically UTXO set, right? So the faster the block time or bigger blocks, you tend to have more transactions, and then, you know, potentially more UTXOs created. That definitely will create more demand on state storage, but also bandwidth as well, right? So when you have bigger blocks, that means just more data has to be transmitted, you know, with the same amount of time. So, you know, it would demand higher throughput or bandwidth requirements. So then, you know, it will be increasingly difficult for somebody, you know, just, you know, staying at home, have a home computer to be able to catch up on with all of that. I think for Bitcoin, it's less of, you know, at least current, you know, right now, it's less of a problem. But for Ethereum, for example, you already see this happening. It's just, you know, unless you're a professional and then, you know, running nodes on a cloud machine with very high specs, you know, multiple CPUs and especially SSD hard drives, it's just impossible, almost impossible to run a node at home and then home environment and be able to sort of validate the blockchain from Genesis. You know, you just can't catch up, right? So you become slower and slower, and then take more and more disk space, and
yeah,
the progression of, you know, validated from Genesis will just be you just always be slower than the current where the head is, for example.
Yeah. So could we dive into a little bit of you know, what makes good crypto economics? I know you said you were doing some research in that, and kind of the idea here is we want to know what makes a token actually accrue value.
Yeah, so that's something we put a lot of time to research. So let's again use something simpler like a Bitcoin. The reason that Bitcoin has value is basically people believe that the network is secure over time, and then that the network can protect their Bitcoin over time. And then that's the reason people are willing to treat Bitcoins as money or as store of value, right? And then Bitcoin Network has more or less, you know, succeeded in this goal. And the reason of this is very important, is that as the value of a Bitcoin increases over time, the network itself is able to raise its security or cost of attack, so to speak, right? As Bitcoin's value increase. So hypothetically, right, if Bitcoin miners are paid not with BTC, but with US dollars, with fixed amount of US dollars per block, right, then the security of the Bitcoin network won't hold up, because as Bitcoins themselves increase the value, let's say 100 times, but the miners' income stay the same, right? So that just means you're giving more incentive for attackers to attack the network. But because the Bitcoin miners are paid with the native currency of the network, which is BTC, then if Bitcoin's price go up, let's say 100 times, which means miners' income also go up 100 times, right? Because they're paid with, you know, within a difficulty adjustment period, it's the same number of BTCs. So, and this holds up, right? So even, you know, this, the sort of the value you store becomes more valuable, the asset you store becomes more valuable, you are able to attract, because you're paying out more reward to the miners, therefore you can attract more hash power. So you are able to attract more hash power, sort of raise your defense as the asset value increases, right? So this is what works for Bitcoin. Now, this is, you know, primarily because there is a block reward exists for the Bitcoin network. Now, when after all the Bitcoins, 20 million Bitcoins are issued, are mined out, you know, there is a question whether this model can still work, but, you know, we don't have to go there. But so going back to the question, you know, what makes Bitcoin valuable, is because it can be sustainably secure, right? So people are willing to put their savings, for example, into the Bitcoin network to store, you know, as a store value network, right? Now, you know, for multi-asset platforms, you can't say the same, right? So because, like, take an example for Ethereum, there are many different of assets running on top of Ethereum,
right,
in the form of tokens. Now, miners, however, are only paid with one currency, which is ETH. So unless there is a clear path that, you know, as the value of all these tokens on Ethereum network increases, ETH also will increase, then we could run into this, the problem that I described earlier for Bitcoin, if miners were paid with US dollars, right? So for a lot of, I would say for all other smart contract platforms than Nervos, this path of value capture or value transfer, there's no direct path, right? So it more or less just depends on people's voluntarily willingness to hold the native currency as the ecosystem becomes more, you know, we call this heavy asset problem, as the assets become more valuable or heavy. So what we believe is, for multi-asset platforms, it's essential that native currency will, they have to be able to capture the ecosystem value, right? So for all the tokens, or what, you know, the value is running on top of the platform. So that's the sort of the centerpiece of our crypto economics design to serve that purpose.
Very cool.
So that we can behave as a sort of multi-asset store value platform.
Awesome. So let's take a slightly different direction. We want to talk a little bit about smart contracts. When will smart contracts start playing a role for the average consumers? And what are a few ways that you think everyday people will start interacting with them at first?
Yeah. So I think there are two type of thoughts on this. And one is, this is how the concept smart contracts came about, is to treat the treat them as basically contracts, right? Just like a real world contract, that the behaviors are pre-programmed, so that we get into this, when we interact with the blockchain, we know exactly what will happen. The other sort of thoughts, direction of thoughts, is to treat this more as a asset platform, and then, you know, use the smart contracts as the rules that bound the behaviors of asset transfers or asset behaviors. So for us, we are more in the second direction. We're more aligned with the second direction, right? So what we believe, again, I think I said in the very beginning, the unique property of public blockchain is that it can represent and represent value, and then in a trustless way, right? So it's kind of like an alternative financial platform, if you will. If you use the word financial loosely to represent like anything, transaction value. So the way we look at it, that's the unique proposition of the blockchain. And then that's also how we feel the adoption path of the blockchain is, as more and more real world or, you know, digital native value being created in the space, then blockchain tech or blockchain platform themselves will also, you know, gain adoption and get more mind share of regular users. That's how we see. That's how we see the future.
Very nice. Well said. You know, Kevin, before we let you go here, something that we always like to ask people who come on the show is, you know, what is one company that you think is having the greatest impact on our crypto space right now? And it can't be your own company.
Okay. Instead of a company, I mean, I'll just say a project.
Okay.
Because a lot of the, yeah. So I would definitely say Ethereum because, obviously Bitcoin is there, but I suppose Bitcoin is not the answer you want to hear.
We like Bitcoin too.
But we both do, right? But I think Ethereum has really expanded the horizon of, you know, what blockchain tech can do, and also to sort of pioneer the R&D, research and development of this space. And then it's still very much the, you know, the platform with the largest ecosystem and a lot of developers and people doing interesting things. So we definitely have a lot of respect for Ethereum.
When do you think the price of Ethereum and some of these altcoins will bounce back?
That's a good question. If I know that,
like if I knew that, yeah. I wouldn't be here. I'd be on a beach in Tahiti.
Yeah, probably not that. But I'm just trying to say. I mean, that's a question nobody really knows.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Kevin. If the people want to follow you, the good people of Crypto 101, could we direct them to a social channel for you or a Telegram or anything?
Yeah, so I am at KN Wang, KNWANG on Twitter. But also, you know, follow Nervous Network in general. I think we are, we're on Telegram, we're on Twitter. You know, website is nervos.org, nervos.org. So I think we definitely have something interesting and a lot of interesting research going on there.
Awesome.
Welcome everybody to join our community.
Great. Thank you, Kevin. We'll definitely take a look.
And we are excited to keep tabs on what's going on with Nervos Network. So we wish you all the best.
Thanks, guys, for having me here.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.